This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. If the state of Michigan is looking to save money, one report recommends looking at the state's prisons. The Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending, or CAPS, finds that Michigan could safely reduce the state's prison population by 10,000. Barbara Levine is founder of CAPS and now serves as its Associate Director for Research and Policy. Barbara Levine, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Gordon, very much for having me.
So first of all, how much money could the state save?
Oh, about $250 million by year five, if all of these recommendations were implemented.
So we're starting off, you'd have to ramp up to that. In other words, you'd start off with somewhat smaller savings in year one?
Yeah, it would. The savings would increase over time. Our estimate is based on the savings 5 years out, but it would be 10,000 prisoners and $250 million by then.
How do you come up with this figure of 10,000 prisoners?
Well, what we did in our report was look at the way the prisoner population has grown, what drives ups and downs in the prison population. Prison numbers are not driven by crime rates. Crime rates have been falling steadily for decades. They're driven by specific policy decisions. And a lot of the policy decisions made in the 80s and 90s about sentencing, about parole, about the elimination of any sort of good time for prisoners based on their conduct and program participation, all the decisions that were made tended to push the population up. And so we examine those, and then we make recommendations on how to bring it back down. It's a question of if you have more people come in and you don't have as many people go out the back door, the population increases. So how to affect that equation? And what we did was come up with a whole series, ultimately about 24 recommendations, that would change that equation, and we attempted to attach a bed space estimate to each of the recommendations. Now, they're estimates. We think they're informed, credible estimates, but certainly they're just estimates. But enough to, we hope, spark some debate.
Who is currently in prison in Michigan right now? Who should not be in prison?
At one end, we have a lot of people coming in with sentences shorter than 2 years. And it's really a questionable use of prison bed space. If the offenses are not that serious, then these are people who may well be dealt with just as well, just as effectively in the community. Some of those two-year sentences, a lot of them actually, come from the statute that requires a mandatory two-year prison term for possessing a firearm while committing a felony. You don't have to use the firearm, just be in possession of it. That was passed in the late 70s, and there's close to 400 people a year committed just for the firearm offense alone because they've gotten probation on the underlying offense. So, and then there are a lot of other people who are serving that 2 years consecutive to the offense or the underlying offense. So right now there's a bill that just came out of the House Criminal Justice Committee that would change that mandatory two-year sentence and give judges more discretion in sentencing for that. So that's an example of this sort of lower-end sentences where the corrections department doesn't have a lot of time to work with people. It's not clear what the point is of prison if the offense isn't that serious. At the other end, a large share of Michigan prisoners are serving time for assaultive offenses. And the reason why we have proportionately more assaultive offenders is because Michigan does not do like many states do and send an awful lot of low-level offenders to prison. For instance, we've never sent very low-level drug offenders to prison like some states and the feds do. So we've got more assaultive offenders who are serving longer sentences, and the issue is whether those sentences are so long in some cases that they're just far beyond what's necessary to protect the public, and whether those people are actually getting released once they've served their minimum sentence. So a big part of the issue is keeping people beyond the time they've served their minimum when the research shows that there's no public safety benefit to that. There's no research showing any correlation between how long you serve and the likelihood of reoffending. But Michigan's time served on the average, and that's the result of the sentence and parole decisions, is far in excess of the average of other states.
Going back for a moment to those sentences which you said, 2 years or less, perhaps there's a better use of prison time. What's the alternative to prison time for someone who does bring a gun to a crime, even if they don't use it. I can't imagine very many people out there will hear that somebody has done that and think that, they don't need to do something about that. What's an alternative to prison?
There are various community-based sanctions, and some of them are residential, and some of them are, you know, strictly supervised probation. Some of them can go towards the causes of people's criminal behavior, whether it's substance abuse, mental health, the need for serious job training and employment opportunities. So, I mean, the majority of people who are convicted of felonies don't go to prison right now, and the question is whether more of them can be diverted. Drug courts have been a very successful option in this state. Now there's a move towards having more mental health courts, veterans courts. The Council on State Governments recommended that there be a more intensive focus on high-risk offender probationers so that fewer of them have their probation violated and end up in prison. So there's a lot of innovative things that can be done that are based in the community. Prison isn't the answer to everything, and it's not certainly not the only way to punish people. You can have some pretty serious oversight in the community.
Many people, of course, like the idea of the state saving money somehow, some way. But I think when we talk about prisons, people are always going to be leery of the idea of letting someone out of prison who they fear could commit a crime again, especially if they think that that might be a violent crime. What leads you to conclude that Michigan could have 10,000 fewer prisoners and not be in any greater danger in terms of violent crime being committed?
For one thing, there is the research that shows that increased length of stay simply doesn't have any relationship to whether people reoffend. But also, the fact that someone committed a violent offense years, maybe decades ago, a rape, a murder, an assault, an armed robbery, and got a substantial sentence for that is not an indication of whether they are a current risk today. In fact, although people find it counterintuitive, homicide and sex offenders have far and away the lowest reoffense rates. And so they're often situational crimes with very specific reasons, and a significant prison sentence may well be appropriate for punishment. But once that punishment has been served, unless there's evidence that on an individual basis somebody today represents a current risk, then continuing to keep somebody in prison because of what they did years, or like I say, in many cases decades ago, is simply it's simply being punitive with no benefit to public safety. We also have a large group. There's about 850 people who were given parolable life sentences, not non-parolable life for first-degree murder, but parolable life sentences, because that's an option for serious offenses. But years ago, judges gave parolable life sentences in the belief that people would be released shortly after they became eligible, which at the time was 10 years. You've got people who were sentenced in the late 60s, the 70s, into the 80s, who judges thought were going to do 12 or 14 years, who have now served 25, 30, 35 years simply because the parole board's policy towards life has changed in the interim.
You mentioned that the state will have to sort of work up to that savings of $250 million a year. But I'm wondering, as you talk about some of these people perhaps getting out and trying to bring them back into society, will the state have to perhaps spend some money in the short term to try and help people get out of prison and not end up reoffending?
Absolutely. And one of the things we strongly advocate is called justice reinvestment, shifting some of the resources that will be saved in incarceration towards various activities that prevent crime. Certainly supporting prisoner reentry is one thing, and investing in at the community level in the sorts of services like mental health and substance abuse treatment that help people address the problems that can get them in trouble is another. And even more broadly, simply investing more resources in high crime communities, in education, infrastructure, housing, job training, so that ultimately that's the ultimate form of crime prevention. I mean, the cheapest prisoner is the one who isn't there, and the best way to prevent crime is to help people so that their motivation is changed. Also, you know, the other piece of this is we have a lot of prisoners as a result of lengthening prison sentences in the 80s and 90s. The result of that, and people are finding this all over the country, is that your prisons start to fill with aging prisoners. We have thousands of prisoners who are age 50, 55, into their 60s, and well beyond, so that you're starting to have prisons with where you've got aging prisoners using walkers and wheelchairs going down the corridors, people getting older and having serious health problems. So not only are these people very low risk, but they're very costly to keep.
But what happens to that person who's using a walker or has serious health problems once they're let out of the system? Because it seems that in prison, at least, those health needs would be addressed if you put them out into society. And it doesn't seem as though their employment opportunities are going to be very numerous. So what does the state do with somebody who they let out of prison after that amount of time, who now probably is going to still need care for the rest of their life?
You're absolutely right, of course, in outlining the problem. And the board doesn't just simply throw people out. I mean, the department looks at people's parole plans before they release them. But there are a lot of people who still have family members. There are people who are eligible, for instance, for veterans benefits and may be able to go to a veterans facility. Certainly people are going to be eligible for Medicare or Medicaid. So, yeah, people need help putting together parole plans. And there are going to be some who may not be placeable. But even if it means developing placements on the outside that are designed for aging prisoners, once they got out, they would be eligible for federal health care benefits that they can't get as long as they're prisoners, and the security would not, you wouldn't need the custody costs that you have in prison. So some creative planning so that you can do medical transfers and medical paroles of prisoners into nursing homes, even if they're nursing homes that are designed for prisoners or former prisoners, would still save a great deal of money and give people at least a little freedom after serving years in prison.
Governor Snyder recently outlined some ideas on trying to save money on corrections at the state level. Do you think that some of what he has spelled out for what he'd like to do lines up well with what you have in your report?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things he called for was presumptive parole, letting people who are low risk out when they've served their minimum sentence, and unless very specific, you know, exceptions exist. And that's something we've supported for years, and a bill that would create presumptive parole got out of the House Criminal Justice Committee last week. And there are certainly other things in his speech that move in the same direction. And overall, his tone, he's just indicated a shift in sort of attitude and in support for justice reinvestment and getting to root causes of problems. Governor Snyder likes to characterize himself as a problem solver, and he's shown that in that speech. We were very, very grateful for it. And there's more of a bipartisan consensus going on nationally and at the state level in the House. Rep. Joe Hobman in his last, throughout his whole term, really worked to build Republican support for some reforms. And then this term, Representative Heise was the sponsor of both the presumptive parole bill and the bill to change the penalties for felony firearms. So it's an uphill battle, and, you know, we know there's certainly opposition that we're likely to see in the Senate and from the Attorney General, but the conversation is definitely changing.
The Attorney General is one of the people who most people look at and say probably prevented a much stronger bill from getting out of the legislature during the last term. Have you met with Attorney General Bill Schuette? Do you plan to meet with him? Do you think that there is some persuasion that can be done with his office?
We haven't met with him personally. We've certainly been part of legislative work groups where he had representatives, and it's a little hard. I don't know that we're going to be able to persuade him. He's certainly well aware of our positions on things. But one point I want to make in response to your point is that a lot of the opposition is framed in terms of protecting victims. And there is the debate really isn't about choosing between common sense reforms and concern for crime victims. It's a false dichotomy. Nothing in any of our proposals certainly would take anything away from victims, not their rights at sentencing, not their rights to talk to the parole board, not their rights to restitution. We're about creating fewer victims. And certainly, you know, more support for current victims is in no way inconsistent, you know, with the proposals we've made. There's nothing in any of our proposals that would prevent a judge from giving a long sentence to a serious offender, a high-risk offender. and nothing that would require the parole board to release someone who's currently at risk.
What should we be looking for in the next perhaps weeks and months out of the legislature? Are there other bills which you think are going to move soon? How do you see this debate sort of playing out over the short term and maybe even the long term?
Well, certainly in the short term, we'll see the presumptive parole and felony firearm bills get to the floor of the House. Hopefully, they'll be fine there. Then the attention will shift to the Senate, and we'll have to try and prevent them from being amended or flat out shot down. We anticipate there will be bills looking at medical paroles and medical transfers to start addressing the problem we just discussed about people who are aging or maybe not old, but seriously ill. You know, young people come into prison and develop cancer or heart problems just like anywhere else in the population. Beyond that, of course, the one bill that did get through lame duck last fall was the one that created the Criminal Justice Policy Commission. And that commission, and I was one of the people appointed to it by Governor Snyder, that commission has just started to meet. It had its first meeting last month, and we'll have another one shortly. That commission has a very broad mandate to reconsider the sentencing guidelines and consider whether the guidelines ranges should be changed, maybe narrowed, whether sentences should be shaved a little bit or judicial discretion reined in a little bit in the context of the guidelines. But that commission also can look at parole, at anything that affects sentencing and the length of incarceration. So it has a broad mandate. We'll just have to see where that goes.
Barbara Levine, thank you for your time.
Thank you for your interest. I appreciate the opportunity.
Barbara Levine is the founder of the Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending, or CAPS. She now serves as its Associate Director for Research and Policy. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.